Welcome to World Ocean Radio. I'm Peter Neal, director of the World Ocean Observatory, and our subject today is ocean literacy. Our guest is Craig Strang, associate director of the Lawrence Hall of Science, University of California at Berkeley. Craig has been a member of a team of people who are investigating the role of marine science in American education. Craig, the ocean covers 70% of the surface of the world, and 60% of the people of the world live within 100 miles of the coasts. And yet the ocean remains a vast mystery, a place apart. How do we define it physically, but also how does it affect human life?
Well, I think the most important distinguishing characteristic about the ocean that affects all of our life is that it's huge, it's big. It affects every aspect of life on Earth and the history of our planet. And so one of the most important ideas that we hope that every student would encounter in their K-12 career is that there's only one ocean. It's a huge interconnected body of water that all people share, all life on Earth share, and needs to be treated as one contiguous body of water, not as separate entities to be managed separately or distinctly. So while it's widely understood that the ocean affects and shapes the features of the Earth, it's not as widely recognized that life in the ocean has played a huge role in shaping both the biological and physical features of the Earth. Life in the ocean has produced most of the oxygen on our planet and most of the landforms, in fact, on our planet. And ocean processes, including watersheds and rivers leading to the ocean, shape almost all of our terrestrial features. So it's not possible to really understand what you're looking at in terms of topography or bathymetry on Earth without understanding ocean processes and the huge role that the ocean has played in geology and geosciences. The ocean controls and regulates our weather and climate, and we're becoming increasingly aware of this as discussions about climate change emerge and become more accessible to the public and more visible to the public. We've always known the role that the ocean plays in regulating our climate, but now as climate's changing, this is becoming increasingly important, critical for students and the public to understand. The ocean, more than any other feature on our planet, makes Earth habitable. It has allowed for all life to exist, both because of the production of oxygen that occurs in the ocean and the fact that all life forms originated in the ocean. So the thing that distinguishes our planet from all the other planets in the solar system is the presence of a large ocean. And so we, as far as we know, the Earth is the only planet that has been able to support life. In that regard, the ocean is responsible also for the tremendous diversity of life on our planet and the huge diversity of ecosystems on our planet. The diversity of life in the ocean is far greater than that on land, and it's mostly expressed in the huge number of phyla that exist in the ocean. On land, we see diversity in terms of species diversity. There are many different types of insects, for instance. But in the ocean, it's not at the species level, it's at the phylum level that we see this huge diversity. Whole groups of animals and organisms that do not occur on land. When we talk about biodiversity, it's almost impossible to avoid a discussion about diversity in the ocean. So those are some of the most important ideas that define the physical and biological characteristics of the ocean and have led us to think that an education system for children in our country can't be complete without some in-depth study of the ocean and ocean sciences.
All of this is cosmic, difficult to understand, difficult to explain. How do we get people to understand it emotionally? How do we get them to understand it through the fact that it connects so directly to so many aspects of our daily life, that if there are changes in the ocean, or if there are new species discovered that can bear upon our public health, how do we make that connection, not just with students in schools, but with people all over the world?
Well, there are a number of different pathways to that type of connection. And I think the most important one that you're asking about is almost a spiritual connection. And that comes, I think, only from direct contact with the ocean. And those of us that have spent time on the ocean or on the shoreline know exactly that feeling that's indescribable, that you feel nowhere else than when you're looking out over that vast, spectacular body of water. A tremendous amount of our music, art, culture, religion, in all people around the world have emerged from that sense of awe for the ocean. I was very struck in working with Navajo people on the Navajo reservation that they have myths and legends and dream worlds that exist related to the ocean, even though their people had never seen the ocean before. So that's one level that's very difficult to describe in a kindergarten through 12th grade curriculum full of standards and assessments. The other level that lends itself to that environment, I think, is to uncover the connections, to help students, to help children, to help teachers uncover their connections to the ocean that are not necessarily dependent on their physical presence near the ocean. And I think it's not clear to people living in the middle of the country how much their daily lives are affected by the ocean and how much they affect the ocean. Any one of us anywhere in the country can open up our kitchen cabinet and trace most of the products on our shelves in cans, in the freezer, in the refrigerator, back to some ocean resource. Clearly, the oxygen that we breathe comes mostly from the ocean, no matter where we live. Nearly everything about our daily lives, including weather, climate, food, religion, is somehow connected back to the ocean.
What about fresh water? The water we drink and take for granted.
This is a very important idea that's very directly connected to this concept of there's only one ocean. And that statement, there's only one ocean, really embodies a new way of thinking about the ocean, that the ocean is not just the salt water out there, but rather it is all the water on our planet that cycles and circulates through our watersheds and to the ocean. And we know that all the water in our watersheds, all the water that we drink, has come from precipitation that originally came from evaporation over the ocean. So every drop of water on our planet is from and will return to the ocean in a relatively short period of time.
I think people also need to understand how changes affected by human behavior, our behavior on land from the mountaintop to the coastline, has an impact that heretofore has not been necessarily a measurable or observable. But in fact, as we see when in the discussions of global warming, that things like sea level rise or the change in ocean temperature or a change in the acid, the pH of the ocean, has tremendous potential impact on our, the success of our living, indeed possibly even our survival.
Well, now you're really talking about the most basic definition of ocean literacy that many of us have come to agree on across the country, and that is ocean literacy is an understanding of the ocean's impact on me and my impact on the ocean. And this is really the message that we're trying to take out to teachers and educators around the country, that though we have often viewed the ocean as a vast resource impossible to overexploit or even to conceive in its immensity, that ocean resources are in fact quite limited, and that our hunger for protein and for seafood and for coastal development is really having an impact very directly on the ocean's ability to sustain our life as well as the great biodiversity that it has historically held.
I think we also should reflect a little bit on the ocean as an economic contributor to our life. The fact is, if you go into a large box store in your local shopping mall, some 90% of the goods that are there available for your use have been brought to this country by ships on an ocean trading network, which if it was shut down, that is through some closure of the ports either in America or Europe or Asia, would have immediate impact on the availability not just of things that we buy to wear and eat, but also in terms of our employment practices and our tax base. And this is something that I don't think people have any understanding about at all. And yet it is so fundamental to what we take for granted in the efficiencies of a developed country.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I you know, you and I, Peter, have this very deep personal connection to the ocean that, as we were discussing, borders almost on spiritual and comes from our deep understanding of ocean processes as well as the feeling that we get from being near the ocean. On the other hand, I'm from California, and California has a $43 billion ocean economy. And so even independent of any of those deeper sensibilities about the ocean, we are connected to the ocean in ways that we can't escape. And $43 billion in California, that's bigger than the economies of most whole nations. So we have some enlightened self-interest here in maintaining a healthy and productive and sustainable ocean ecosystem.
And there are also all the less visible aspects of ocean involvement in our lives. The products that are derived from the ocean, algae and enzymes and seaweed, which finds its way into the manufacture of products that we don't really understand, even when we read the labels. But you find it in cosmetics, you find it in medicines, you find it in research for new medicines. We have, in fact, exhausted the medicinal potential of the terrestrial microbe, but the ocean represents an enormous potential. And we have a census of marine life that's going on now, where scientists all around the world are trying just to inventory what's available, what's there. And they're finding thousands of new species and animals, and all of those may have tremendous potential for our well-being.
I'm a big ice cream guy. And so that's enough of a reason for me to want to protect the ocean, to protect that access to carrageenan and algin and agar. But of course, as you're saying, there are much more important, much more profound uses for ocean resources that are being discovered and are as yet undiscovered. And we know that the ocean is a repository for pharmaceuticals, for nanotechnology, for biotech, etc., and we've barely scratched the surface of understanding new ways that the ocean can help to sustain and improve our lives. And as you know, we know more about the surface of the moon, we know more about the surface of Mars than we know about the bottom of the ocean. So there's a huge amount left to be learned, and we can't stop our commitment to learning and understanding about the ocean until we've progressed considerably further in that regard.
Well, I'm convinced, and I hope our listeners are convinced. But that brings us to the question as to why, if the ocean is so important to our lives and understanding of it is so essential, why is it that marine science and marine biology is almost entirely absent from secondary school curriculum and even universities? Marine science is not taught in any of the schools 5 years ago, any schools in the New York City public school system, for example. And I think this is true all over the country, that there is a kind of adversity, an adverse reaction by the science teaching establishment to include this, if only as a discipline or a perspective. It's typically relegated to some small unit in the biology or natural science curriculum. What can we do to change that?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand how we got to that point. And it's a complicated set of circumstances that got us where we are. So I don't mean to oversimplify or mischaracterize what's happened in our K-12 education system. But by comparison, when President Kennedy launched us on our mission to land on the moon and NASA was formed, there was a requirement in the legislation that has funded all of the research and all the missions in our space program since, that every dollar of funding that's put into science and exploration be matched by a percentage between 1 and 10% in education and public outreach. So there's always been a large commitment to communicating with the public about the importance of exploring space. And I think as a result, there's been a tremendous amount of support from the public to continue those endeavors that go across political lines, that go across socioeconomic lines, and across cultural barriers. When it comes to exploring the ocean, there has not been a similar connection, a similar commitment to education and public outreach. Much of the research on the ocean has been funded by agencies in the federal government that, through no fault of their own, do not have education within their charter. That's changing, and there is a recognition now that there needs to be a similar commitment to communicating with the public the importance of these endeavors. That means that ocean science concepts and the kinds of information that we've been discussing over the last half an hour need to be incorporated in a formal and systematic way into the K-12 curriculum. That is through academic standards, through curriculum materials and textbooks that derive from the standards, and perhaps most importantly, in the form of assessments in large-scale testing systems that hold states and school districts accountable for what their students are learning.
But perhaps there's another way of looking at it. Perhaps that rather than isolating it, as we typically do, is one science, what we find is that it can be easily incorporated into many sciences, and in fact, just as it can be incorporated into the social sciences. And I think it has to do with a consciousness on the part of educational policymakers and administrators and teachers, as they look at how they're going to integrate this information, is that it find its way into the chemistry curriculum or the physics curriculum or the literature curriculum, the history curriculum. And that it's notably absent. I mean, United States of America is a country that was built on maritime enterprise, but you don't find that as a fundamental precept in how our history is presented to people. And it's the same thing is true in chemistry. And yet chemistry is and the potential for chemical advancement, the understanding of chemistry and the chemical systems of the world, the ocean is a tremendous potential tool.
Right. I completely agree. And this has been the focus of the effort that we've this has been the focus of our effort to bring together scientists and educators around the country to come to some agreement, to some large-scale consensus across the country about what are the most important things that need to be taught about the ocean before a student leaves 12th grade. We've tried to identify the most, not everything that a student could know or that we'd even like students to know, but the essential things, the things that are the most important that define what they need to understand in order to be considered a complete and literate citizen of our country. Now, that information, those essential principles of ocean literacy, can be used as the outline of a course on ocean sciences. But that's probably not going to be the way, as you're describing, that this information will reach most students. It needs to be incorporated into all the disciplines of science and certainly social studies as well. And we're hoping that chemistry teachers, biology teachers, physics teachers, geology teachers will all be able to look at these essential principles of ocean sciences and find in them the elements of their own discipline that need to be incorporated into their courses and materials. So, for instance, students are routinely taught in biology classes about primary productivity. They study photosynthesis. Photosynthesis is one of the most taught concepts in our education system. In fact, it's an example of a concept that's taught almost every year, but always inadequately. So students always know about photosynthesis, but never have a deep understanding of it. Well, they're never taught about chemosynthesis in the ocean, which is critically important to understanding the bigger idea of primary productivity on our planet. You can't understand the chemical balances and how to balance the chemical equations of our land, ocean, atmospheric systems without understanding the processes that don't depend on sunlight to support life on our planet, that have only recently been described in the last 20 to 30 years, occurring in deep sea vents and a handful of other places in the planet. So that's an example of a type of concept that should be in every biology curriculum, not just in a marine science course.
The issue of governance is also instructive, I think. When we look at fisheries and management and regulation, and the conflicts and progress that's being made to mitigate the impact of technology on our ability to harvest from the ocean, how does that get taught as well, that we need to be able to manage not only our oceanic environment but our terrestrial environment in such a way as to sustain it for its potential that we've discussed?
Well, you're taking me a little bit out of my depth now, but what I would say is that, like many other complex problems and complex systems, the key to developing sustainable systems for addressing those complex problems is having a large and deep foundation of understanding on which to make our decisions. And that comes right back to ocean literacy. I think that we need to have more and more and more students coming out of our schools representing different cultures, different ways of thinking, different disciplines that have a deep understanding of how the ocean works and the importance of protecting the ocean to keep us all healthy. And out of that large pool of literate citizens will emerge a handful that can help us to create these new systems for managing something as complex as ocean resources. The United States Commission on Ocean Policy issued its final report a couple of years ago, and they made a very substantial shift in how they conceive the management of ocean resources. They're recommending very strongly an ecosystems approach rather than a species approach to managing ocean resources. This is something that environmentalists have been talking about for a long time, but it has reached the mainstream of United States policy. Now, we're a long ways from implementing a coherent ecosystems-based policy in the United States around the ocean, but I think we're moving in that direction, and it's coming out of a broader population-wide sense of ocean literacy.
I'm always asked, you need change, change is slow, when are we going to reach the tipping point? And my response has always been, well, the tipping point is past, and that you can see it in the global awareness of the impact of the Indian Ocean tsunami and the destruction of a great city by a hurricane, Hurricane Katrina, that those two things made extraordinary impact on public awareness of the power of the ocean and the importance of it, not just as a threat, but as something that we need to understand so that we can avoid those kinds of consequences. And that pertains to planning and all the other kinds of things, food production, where we locate our wells, sanitation and sewer facilities, all these many things that need to be reassessed in the context of a changed perspective.
Yeah, I suppose it's always the case that by the time we know that a tipping point has been reached, we're long past it. But I think you're right. The hurricane, the tsunami, the huge amount of attention that's been given to the plight of polar bears, which are symbolic of the receding ice caps. The fact that a movie like Inconvenient Truth could be seen widely across the country and appreciated by people across political boundaries. The fact that seafood watch cards are appearing in everyone's wallets and purses around the country. I think there are a number of indicators that there is a new awareness of the ocean that is sweeping across the country, and I think it's very hopeful. I wish it had happened 30 years ago. I think we're in a grave situation, but I think we are at a point where change is occurring, and we're seeing it right now. Scientists are more committed than ever in communicating with the public, and I think their communication has been extremely effective. So I look forward to the next 2 to 5 years to see some of these changes actually translated into policies at the national level.
What's the next steps for your group?
Well, we're working with school districts, state departments of education, textbook publishers, museum and aquarium directors to take the principles of ocean literacy that we've all come to agreement about and find creative and innovative ways to incorporate them into the messages that we're all taking forward. There's not a particular program or one initiative or one next step. This work that we're doing has been very broad-based, very grassroots, and we're seeing the results in a number of different arenas simultaneously. So I think this is a situation where a large unified effort is not necessarily the thing that's needed. This really is a situation where a thousand flowers blooming is what's required, and they all need to be big and showy flowers all simultaneously. We need to be working on all fronts if we're going to make progress before it really is too late to create a sustainable system for protecting our ocean resources.
Thank you, Craig. We've been talking with Craig Strang, Associate Director of the Lawrence Hall of Science at the University of California in Berkeley. World Ocean Radio is brought to you by the World Ocean Observatory, a forum for ocean affairs, information and educational services online at www.thew2o.net. That's www.thew2o.net. Thank you for joining us.